It's another tricky issue.
You know, I get why they did this today. What are you actually doing other than just running your mouth?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Ryan Doyle, Richard Krause with you here on the Roundtable this afternoon for your Friday. Let's talk to some great people about some big stories here in our world. Christy Blatchford is here from the National Post. Jaskaran Sandhu, Senior Consultant at Crestview Strategy. Oase Lightwalla, who is the Managing Director of Why Not Theatre. I love all of you for being here today because we got some great stuff. So welcome.
As you should love us.
I mean, I love you every day for the most part, but... For the most part. Yeah. Extra special. Yeah. That's as much love as I can give, Christy. I'm not capable of much more.
You can't talk in absolutes.
No. It's not physically possible.
No.
Let's talk about a guy who speaks in absolutes, Donald Trump. Today, he phoned a supporter of his who he mistakenly called fat yesterday.
That guy's got a serious weight problem. Go home, start exercising. Get him out of here, please.
Christy, the guy was a Trump supporter, it turns out, so the president gave him a phone call. He was interviewed afterwards. He says, oh, yeah, I love the Donald. It's all good. Do you think any of the candidates get away with that here in Canada?
The prime minister probably could, yep.
Okay.
But the prime minister is an orange with two small hands and the world's worst haircut. So I don't get the kind of self-confidence that you have to make fun of somebody else's physical being when your own is so amusing.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
Donald Trump once said, if I shoot someone, like these people still march behind me.
Yep.
This doesn't surprise me. And this is actually the reaction from the victim of Donald Trump's abuse here laughed it off. Because let's face it, Donald Trump is acting consistently with his character. This is what you expect from the guy.
This is the show. This is the show. And this guy was part of the show. It's almost like, you know, when you're in a comedy club and there's a heckler. The heckler for that moment, when the comedian says something just cutting and terrible to them, for that moment, that person's part of the show. And often they enjoy it just as much as anyone else in the room. That guy is, as we were saying earlier, getting beers bought for him in his bar in Boston.
Oase,
right
this
now.
Guy seems to be a bit of a local hero in a way.
I mean, we saw this before Trump even got elected, but the Access Hollywood tape that came out where he openly bragged about sexual assault, and then all the white women of America said, that sounds like a great guy to vote for. I think it's just further confirmation that the time we live in, all politics is identity politics.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the politics that happened here in this country, because it was an Acadia Day festival. I've never been to it. Blatch, have you ever been to an Acadia Day festival?
No, okay. I haven't.
We should be invited to one of those at some point, I believe.
But then we'll throw our own
next year.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very good point. But there was a bit of a confrontation between the Prime Minister and Conservative leader Andrew Scheer. The festival was going on. They leaned in for a handshake. Andrew Scheer laid in a little closer, whispered in the Prime Minister's ear that he should be upfront with people. Stop lying to people, he said. You've got to come clean. You need to come clean. And the Prime Minister simply looked back as he tried to break the handshake, saying, it's a good day. This is a good day. Christy, this is the first time I can say this. Andrew Scheer impressed me with this move.
I'm not sure I'm impressed by it, but I'm not impressed by it either. I think he's consistent. Well, both of them are consistent. The Prime Minister does keep lying, as the Ethics Commissioner has indeed found, and Andrew Scheer is continuing to call him on it. And whatever else, you know, at least he's trying to deliver privately or quasi-privately the same message that he's trying to deliver publicly.
Jaskaran, that's the break point, right? It's one thing. I think the public sees a guy, stands behind a podium, stands behind a microphone. We expect him to call the Prime Minister out. When he does it to the man's face, it's got a different vibe to it.
Yeah, he looked eye to eye. He locked in that gaze. And he shared his displeasure with Mr. Trudeau, our Prime Minister's inability to apologize for what is, objectively speaking, a major scandal. It really is. And whether or not it was in good taste or was the Prime Minister the bigger man, what some commentators were saying online, it has to be remembered in the context of this question is directed about one of the biggest scandals ever after Mr. Trudeau, the Prime Minister, said, I'm not going to apologize.
Yeah, and Oase, I love the spin on this because a lot of people are saying, oh, the Prime Minister was the bigger man here. What does that even mean? This guy has not answered the direct question.
That he didn't punch him in the face.
That he didn't punch him?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the situation is classic. Everyone is going to see into it what they want to. The people who are rooting for Trudeau to get booted out of this election because of this scandal are going to see this and go, he got him. And the people who think that he did the right thing are going to look at this and go, what a classy move on his part to not react. But I feel like this is the opportunity for Scheer. If he can make this issue convert into a victory, this is the equivalent of Hillary Clinton losing to Donald Trump, the least attractive candidate in all time. And this is his chance. And I don't know how else he's going to convert it except constantly getting in his face.
I don't think, just for the record, I don't think there's anyone in this country who thinks the prime minister did the right thing. I think there are plenty of people who will hold their noses and say they will vote for him anyway. That's a very different matter. It is mm-hmm. now incontrovertible that he did not do the right thing.
And I don't think that this will change anyone's mind, quite honestly. You know, it's the "I knew it was you, Fredo" moment. You know, that means nothing.
We're not allowed to use the word Fredo anymore.
I know. I'm sorry. It was a quote from a movie.
I realize it's just taken on a whole new tone over the last few weeks. Let's talk about one of the things the Prime Minister is trying to make a centerpiece of his campaign. He calls it the first choice when it comes to careers. Christy, he's talking about the trades in this clip. Have a listen.
We know that there can be challenges for certain people to get into trades, particularly minority groups or women or marginalized communities. That's why we've moved forward with a concrete commitment in Budget 2019 to invest in a national campaign to promote the skilled trades as a first choice career for young people.
Christy, I like it. I think it's a smart move. I think if you play to this a little bit more, and I like the language of it, first choice. A lot of the time, it's not a first choice because parents don't allow it to be in the household where kids are looking to go to university, college, post-secondary, what have you.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I mean, certainly the people I value the most in my life are the electrician who helps me, the carpenter, you know, I mean, they are the skilled trades and they're in great demand and short supply. So I don't disagree that this is a good program.
Always. I'm glad that they're putting some money into it. I know it was in the budget, but at least he's continuously talking about it on this campaign.
As an immigrant, I'm so excited to see this initiative because with my parents, it was always doctor, engineer, lawyer. Those mm-hmm. are the respectable professions. And now you see so many people of my generation who cannot get into med school. And it's also simultaneously impossible to find a good plumber. And it's because we don't value all professions equally, which I think is unfortunate. We're going to lose a lot of great opportunities.
Jess, Karen, I don't know how handy you are, but I can tell you that when we live in a world where apps basically, you know, are designed so that tradespeople can come into your home, and there are a lot of apps out there mm-hmm. now for it, mm-hmm. There's definitely a need for people to fill these spots.
Yeah, I like that it's directed towards young people. I look garbage for my age. I admit that, but I am a millennial, so I don't. I still.
You look great. What are you talking about?
No, you're being nice, and I thank you for that.
To be fair, I would not have called you a millennial.
I know you wouldn't have, and you would be correct. That would be the wise thing.
Are you like 19 years old? Is that?
My point being is, I'm not that far removed from being a young person, and I remember going through high school. The trades were an afterthought. They always were an afterthought. And in growing up, even in our own household, the trades were never encouraged. And I think a campaign to just educate about how lucrative a trade career can be, not only that, how important it is for our economy and for our growth, but going back to the innovative industry that we're in, they're looking for trades as one of those things that will outlast everything else. And in fact, will be bolstered by the innovation tech scene kind of bringing the shared economy together.
Yeah, I'm not a millennial. Even close to being a millennial.
You look better than I do, though.
Well, you're
it's
kind.
The hair.
But
it's
you're,
the hair.
Yeah, thank you, yeah. But I think I was among the first generation where the real pressure to become a lawyer or a doctor or something was applied to us. Previous to that, I think that it is seen just, I mean, you could do that, but not everybody went to university. Not everybody, you became a tool and die maker, and that was a great job, and you could put food on the table and buy a house and raise your kids and all that stuff with it. And then there sort of seemed to be this hump where it changed, and if you weren't wearing a suit to work every day and you weren't, you know, working as a professional, that you were going to be seen as something less than. And that is certainly not the case. If I was to do this all over again, honestly, I'd be a tool and die maker.
Let's talk a little bit about the story we've been talking about all hour. The victim of an apparent random stabbing attack at the Beaches International Jazz Festival is speaking out after finding out the person accused of attempted murder and a number of weapons charges is going to be out on bail. This is what he told the victim, what the victim told Newstalk 1010.
I didn't think that he would get bail due to, you know, the severity of the charges. And I'm definitely not happy about it and definitely concerned considering this guy lives just a couple minutes away from me.
Christy, we've got obviously the backdrop of the police chief talking about bail, the mayor talking about bail. When it comes to gun crimes, this is a very high-profile case, and you can hear in the victim's words that he's pretty upset about this. He was barely contacted about what some of the conditions would be against the accused.
No, obviously the communication from the Crown Attorney's office wasn't what it should be. I wasn't there. There are often mitigating circumstances. The presumption is that you will get bail, except in certain reverse onus cases. So I don't particularly want to see that change. I think when you are charged with a crime, you should be presumed to be innocent. Great many people are. I think in the case of an alleged violent incident like this, getting bail should be tougher, but I don't think the whole system needs to be turned on its ear.
Yeah, always just picking up on what Christy said, the idea of, you know, these kind of alleged violent or these kind of violent crimes, maybe we need to change some of the mechanisms when it comes to bail specifically for those.
I mean, I feel like I'm with Christy on that. I think you could react too swiftly to something like this because it is a very rare incident. And there are conditions in this bail of house arrest and having to be in contact with his family and not going anywhere near the victim. I think it is maybe because of the visceralness of the attack. Mm-hmm. It feels something that really gets us very scared. And
the randomness of it,
and
too.
And the randomness, I think that's one of the things that's so interesting about the story is why? Why would someone even do this? But it would be probably foolhardy to change the entire system on the basis of one random attack, which might be explained by something simpler.
Yeah,
age. Sorry, I don't mean to leap back in again. But the alleged attacker is, I think, only 19. I'm betting he's a first offender. If those two things are in his favor, he's halfway home to bail.
Yeah, Jess Karen, when you look at it, I think a lot of people also have pointed out this afternoon that we're hearing from the victim. We don't often get to hear from the victims because we often are talking about murder charges as opposed to attempted murder. And even then, in attempted murder situations, you don't often hear the victim stand up and say, no, wait a minute, this was me that was on the other end of that knife.
Yeah, I think there's obviously very real human stories behind each one of these crimes, right, on the victim and suspect side. But I'm just going to really echo a lot of what was already said. And I'm going to use my lawyer card here because I am one, and I can finally brag about that.
You're a young lawyer.
Yeah, I am. I'm a young lawyer.
A childlike lawyer.
Yes. A very handsome young lawyer. And I've actually practiced in criminal law. I have full faith in the system. I really do. And I think the bail system serves a very important purpose. And there's a lot of aggravating and mitigating factors that go into this decision making. And it's not a decision that's often taken lightly. Like there's a lot of arguments that need to be made on both sides before a judge will grant bail or not, especially in cases like this. I have faith in the system, but at the same time, yeah, it is important when you look at this that it's not some binary 1-0 kind of thing. There is a very emotional human cost to a lot of this stuff, and that should be taken into consideration as well.
Jess Karen Sandhu, Owais Lightwalla, Christy Blatchford.